Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Football and Grits. It's Monday, which means it's time to talk the SEC. I am your host, David Ubben, with my co-host, Andy Staples. And we are joined by our prestigious South Carolina writer, Josh Kendall.
You can say
Josh, I feel like you're the voice of Football and Grits, if we're being honest.
It's all right if you say old.
No, I think no one man personifies the spirit of this podcast more than Josh Kendall. I always enjoy crossing paths with you.
Well, despite the fact that David's from Arkansas and mm-hmm. I was born where you are, Josh, in South Carolina, you're the only one of us with an accent.
Yeah.
Everybody says I have an accent. I just don't hear it, but I'll take y'all's word for it.
I never heard in my relatives' accents either.
Yeah.
People be like, "Oh, the ones who talk country." I'm like, "No. They just sound like them."
Well, Josh, we got to talk about another famous Southerner who doesn't have an accent, Mr. Greg Sankey. You were able to sit down with him recently and talk about he's drawing some parallels, I suppose, to the overlord of college football at this point.
And some Emperor Palpatine memes.
Yeah, there's some Emperor Palpatine vibes. He has better skincare, if we're being real, but
I mean, the Force Lightning was what caused the wrinkles, David.
Yeah, I think the Force Lightning is what got two SEC teams into the national championship a few years ago. He's living an interesting existence. I think, you know, he did some very loud complaining, some warranted complaining about Mark Emmert. I think over the last year, especially with the way that they handled COVID, there's a lot of consternation, I suppose, about big picture governance across college sports. I don't think that I recognize that maybe he could possibly slip into that role himself as the SEC becomes more and more powerful. But you guys, you spent some time with him, talked one-on-one about the Texas and Oklahoma coup, and you wrote a story about that. Before we get too far into it, what was your major takeaway from that conversation?
Well, the biggest headline that came out of it was his very elegant kiss-off of Kirk Schultz at Washington State and his predatory comments. Mm-hmm. But I think the most substantive thing that he said goes back to what you were saying, which is it's pretty clear that Greg Sankey wanted to do everything he could to position the SEC as a potentially standalone unit in a potentially post-NCAA world. He made a comment about it being hard to follow the bouncing ball of the NCAA. Mm-hmm. And if you know Greg Sankey, I mean, that was a pretty firm backhand from Greg Sankey to the NCAA to say, we don't know what in the bleep they're doing over there. We're going to build a big old fence around our thing, and we can survive no matter what. And so mm-hmm. when Texas and Oklahoma were on the market, it was a no-brainer.
Are you calling Greg Sankey a doomsday prepper?
a very elegant doomsday prepper. Don't forget elegant.
But I think I would be in favor of a college sports apocalypse, honestly. The current model.
Well, you're going to get your wish. That's where we're headed.
Yeah, it is.
Well, what does that mean, though? Is that like a roving band of Boise States, like,
well, probably less cannibalism,
just wandering the landscape
if we're going down Mad Max style. We're talking about the road, I would say less cannibalism overall, but probably still some good football.
If you look at what Jeff Schultz wrote today about Georgia Tech, I mean, yeah, they're looking at a Mad Max world where it is every man for himself.
Yeah. I think, you know,
I just got David's Cormac McCarthy reference, so let me just applaud right now. I'm sorry, it took me a minute.
No, I think, like, ultimately, we should provide a little bit of background, because I think these complaints have been bubbling for a long time, but they were never more loud and sharp as they were in the last year, because I don't think, I'm not sure casual fans realize. So when all this COVID stuff is happening in the last year and conferences are trying to figure this stuff out and trying to figure out their own plans, and you saw the disjointed season last year, the NCAA should have just changed their initials to MIA, because the SEC is meeting every day. Most conferences are meeting every day. A conference call.
The five Power Five commissioners were talking every day.
Constantly. Constant communication. And they'd go a month without hearing anything from the NCAA. And it's like they're dealing with this crisis, both in it's a health crisis. They're dealing with their athletes spread all over the country. They're trying to hope that there's a season. They're getting no answers. And they're kind of looking around and saying, isn't this what they should be doing? And I think everyone sort of knew the NCAA was sort of pointless and did not exist for any real reason. And I think the last 2020 really exposed that. And now as you're seeing, you know, sort of some of these autonomy issues and some of these conversations coming up, I think people are realizing, hey, we can do a better job of this. And I feel more confident in myself and our governance and our organization. And I think that 2020 set the stage for what we're seeing right now, to say nothing of the Supreme Court decision, the Alston, all that stuff, and the oncoming tidal wave that's coming in college sports.
If I can defend the NCAA, if only briefly, I mean, the SEC and the Big Ten and even the Pac-12 and everybody else to a lesser degree, they haven't really wanted the NCAA around in their heart of hearts either. They were perfectly fine to run the thing themselves. And now all of a sudden they're crying foul and like, you guys are no help. And the NCAA could argue, I mean, if they could find their behind with both hands, they could argue that you guys created this situation and now you just want to pin it all on us. It's not like Greg Sankey's thinking, oh no, whatever will we do now that we're out here on our own?
Yeah.
We're perfectly fine with no NCAA.
The thing was, Greg Sankey came out of all of that a lot better than some of his colleagues. You know, Jim Phillips, who's the commissioner of the ACC, he was an AD at Northwestern, so he wasn't dealing with that. But Kevin Warren at the Big Ten, I would argue, just made the wrong – I don't know if he made the wrong decision. He made the decision too quickly and left himself no room to maneuver, and it really blew up in his face.
Yeah.
And so you have that. So you had – and then you have the Pac-12 just sort of fell in lockstep with the Big Ten. And that's what I think is interesting about all this alliance stuff that's coming out, because you have the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC are going to form some kind of alliance. And – my initial thought when I heard people talking about this was, oh, it's a scheduling alliance. They're going to create better games so everybody makes more money. That's what an awesome idea. Mm-hmm. And then you hear, oh, no, it's a voting block kind of alliance. And I'm like, but what are they voting on? Is it the college football playoff? Because that's got to be unanimous. So if the three of them agree on something, it still doesn't matter. And if the SEC says, well, we don't want to do automatic bids for all the spots or for most of the spots, then you're not going to. So I don't know. I don't know exactly what that's going to be. All I can think of is same thing you were talking about with Greg Sankey. They're trying to create something for the post NCAA world. And maybe they want to be voting as a block in that post NCAA world to help create the new set of rules everybody needs to live by. Mm-hmm. But what I would wonder about with that, and this is not any fault of the ACC, the Big Ten, or the Pac-12. Are you just recreating the NCAA? It's sort of like, you know, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about some consultant had come to them and said, well, why don't you do it live and take calls in real time? And they're like, oh, you just invented sports talk radio. Great.
Yes.
Okay. So are these guys going to get together and try to reinvent the NCAA, which there is a way to do that and a way to do it where it's not what it was and where it won't get just sued into oblivion. But I think their concern is the SEC is going to try to take its ball and go somewhere else or create rules that are so lax that all the best players come to the SEC and these other leagues don't get any players. And then all of a sudden teams are going to want to leave those leagues for the SEC or schools.
Frankly, if they're creating anything, they're creating division two. I mean, if we're being honest, that, mm-hmm. that sounds harsh, but I think what the SEC has done is strike a preemptive blow to carve out the top of the mountain for itself. And if you're going to form an alliance, if you're thinking we're forming our little mini NCAA, you're the beef light. I'm sorry.
But the Big Ten isn't. The Big Ten is just as powerful as the SEC. I'm telling you right now, because of the timing of the TV contracts, which was Jim Delaney's stroke of genius doing this, the shorter TV contracts, the Big Ten, I will bet, will share more money per school than the SEC will, even after Texas and Oklahoma with Andy come. On so this.
It's true.
So it's not. I mean, ACC. This is. I told somebody on Twitter this today because they were talking about how the Big Ten and the ACC and the Pac-12 were fighting for their very existences. And I'm like, no. The Big Ten is not fighting for its existence. No.
The Big Ten is just trying to have some cronies, I suppose.
Don't forget which one's the shark and which ones are the remoras. Yes.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
First of all, I would just like to say that it's Dwight Schrute's fault that anytime I hear the word alliance, I can't help but chuckle. So this whole thing, this entire story is very hard for me to take serious, even though it is a very big story. Kudos to our intrepid reporters for being all over this. Max Olson, Nicole Auerbach, Andy, I think you've helped out with some of that stuff as well.
I'm of no help to anyone.
Okay, Andy's not a help. But either way, I don't really know, you know, this is an SEC podcast. We should discuss what this means for the SEC. And I think, you know, we were chattering about this a little bit before the show. I mean, the hottest take I think we all have is that the SEC doesn't really know. And I think right now it doesn't really affect them because they're not at a hinge point where they're going to sharply disagree about something. That's where I think the SEC should be concerned, is that if they hit some issue where the SEC wants this and these other three conferences want something else, then if the SEC goes it alone, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, eligibility issues or what players can do or how they can make money, that's one thing. But some sort of issue, then I think the SEC may have to figure something out. But I don't know what that might be.
But what the SEC has to figure out is doesn't have to be, and frankly, probably won't be contingent on what the other ones figure out. Part of what Greg Sankey and I discussed was the possibility of putting the brakes, somebody trying to put the brakes on the CFP expansion. And mm-hmm. he, in a very precise and lawyerly answer, said, we're not the ones who pushed for this. If they want to do that, that's fine. The SEC is perfectly fine if you want to stick with four teams into infinity. And once Texas and Oklahoma are part of the deal, if the alliance or whoever else wants to change whatever rules, the SEC will be in a position to say, like it was pre-2020 season, when everybody else said, we're putting a stop on the season, then the SEC said, okay, great. I hope that works out for you. This is what we're going to do. The SEC has strengthened their ability to continue to say that into forever.
The ACC also said that. And that's the part with this alliance part, because David, you were talking about, you don't know what the issue is going to be. And we don't know what that issue would be, where there would ultimately be these three against the SEC. But I would argue, we don't really know what the issues would be where those three would agree, because on that very, very important topic last year, do you try to play football during this pandemic or not?
Big question.
The ACC very much disagreed with the Big Ten and the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's kind of what this is it's you're drawing lines in the sand and you're choosing sides. And then we'll see sort of when, you know, Mortal Kombat begins, I suppose. And it's just, this is all like a really interesting preamble to the new age of college sports. And it's hard to forecast what it's going to look like. And, you know, what does it take to break up this alliance? Like you said, if not you have much, a situation,
not much
like
would
that,
be my guess.
Yeah, exactly. And it's
takes,
like,
yeah, it takes the right issue that somebody's really passionate about. And
exactly.
Somebody's
if
not.
If this alliance rolls around in 2019 and the pandemic happens, the ACC would be in a really tough spot in this so-called alliance to, okay, well, our leadership wants to play, these other schools don't, but we're in this alliance. We had to figure out what this looks like. And
why did they need to do this right now? I mean, this feels a little bit like a panic move and just an answer to what the SEC is going to do. I'm not sure they had to come up with an answer.
I don't think you're wrong.
Month.
I think it is a direct reflection of the Texas and Oklahoma moves of people just being like, whoa, 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 whoa. We got to.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do this.
Here's the part that everybody forgets. Let's say the SEC goes, no, thanks. We're full up, Texas and Oklahoma. We don't want you guys.
Mm-hmm.
They would have joined the ACC.
Probably.
That's why it's a no-brainer for Greg Sankey and the 14 presidents, because it's not like Texas and Oklahoma are going to say, oh, okay, we'll just ride it out in the Big 12. That's fine. As soon as they came to him and said, we're thinking about leaving, we'd like to join, you have to take them or you fall behind in this process. It was absolute no-brainer. This Zoom meeting, why they had to have a Zoom meeting and not like two texts. Can we come over and play? Yes, let's get it done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's like this, the predatory word is really interesting. And I think there is a sect of people who just don't believe Greg Sankey, that he has this, like, he's going, and I believe him. I think it, like you're talking about, it's not like, I think for people who weren't tracking what was going on in the Big 12, and, you know, I've talked to fans who haven't paid as close attention in the summer and are kind of not sure where this Texas and Oklahoma thing is or where it happened. Well, for one, it is happening. But I think people didn't understand, hey, they tried to make more money. The TV network said, no, we don't want to renegotiate your contract. And they said, okay, well, we want to go to the conference where we can do that.
Yeah,
and
we want to go to the conference where the network was throwing money at them,
exactly,
during a pandemic.
Exactly.
4 years and before the deal started.
Yeah, it's a situation where to say that Texas and Oklahoma forced Sankey's hand is probably not the best way to put it. But, you know, it's like I said, when Texas and Oklahoma knock on the door, you have to answer it. And if you want to call that predatory, I guess, is that good for college football? I think we all be agree that the answer to that is no?
Correct. This, exactly. None of this is good for college football.
I agree that it's not good for college football, but Greg Sankey's job is not to advocate, correct, for college football.
He doesn't work for college football.
Exactly. Yeah. And again,
despite what he said, despite what he said on that call to announce what the playoff proposal was, where they're all like, we did this in the best interest of college. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
You did it in the best interest of your own leagues.
Yes.
Okay. The Pac-12 and the Big 12 and the other leagues, they wanted automatic bids. So that's why you did those. Mm-hmm. And the SEC and the Big 10 and Notre Dame wanted lots of at-large spots. And that's why you did those. And that's okay. It's okay to admit that you worked in the best interest of your employer.
And so that's the issue. I mean, we can talk for circles about how nobody's in charge of college football. This is in many ways a feature, not a bug, of the sport, but I think it does make the sport worse in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, the predatory thing, when he's defending that, I buy what he said there. And I think if you have been paying attention, it's hard to not see that as anything else. I don't think, you know, the Big 12 can be angry, and they probably rightfully are at ESPN for offering some assistance that did not help the Big 12.
Are they not angry at ESPN for saving their butts when the Pac-16 was going to happen?
Well, it's a what have you done for me lately business.
Okay.
so what you did 10 years
checked,
ago,
ESPN did bail them out on that one.
Fair point, but Bowlesby also wasn't the commissioner when that happened, so he's dealing with what he's dealing with now. But no, I think that's so they're frustrated, but the idea that Greg Sankey is looking to undermine the Big 12 is just not, that doesn't really make sense, both logically or just in what happened. You know, if you talk to enough people,
I hate to say it, and this is going to sound callous,
what went on,
I just don't think he cares.
Well, that too. He does.
I don't think it matters to him what happens to the Big 12.
No, it's his job is to work for the SEC. His job is not that. Yeah. I think, again, if you had a commissioner of college football that was in charge, they probably say, no, Texas and Oklahoma, y'all go back. Y'all are really screwing like eight. Because this is the deal. The Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma, the quality of the football is not going to change all that much. It's still going to be a really fun league with some really good teams for now until recruiting becomes an issue over time. But financially, obviously, it makes a lot of sense for them to leave. And it's again, it comes down to this is not good for college football, but that's not his job.
Hey, David, can I game this out?
Please do.
There was a commissioner of college football quote.
Let's hear this.
Okay. Remember Josh's statement about a standalone unit and the SEC being best in position to be that standalone unit? If there's just a football league instead of the NCAA, you know, governing all the sports.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a standalone unit, if that happened, it probably would all kind of come under the umbrella of the SEC just because they have the best collection of brands right now. And the other brands ultimately would join. Guess who the commissioner of college football would be?
Mr. Greg Sankey.
Yeah. So everybody says, oh, there's just a commissioner of college football.
Yeah.
There would not be a commissioner of college football under the current arrangement where everybody's got their own fiefdoms. That only happens if you have a central organization that governs it all, that governs the whole sport and, you know, sets divisions. It would be very much like the NFL. And everybody keeps telling me they don't want something like the NFL.
It would be almost like an
all
empire.
Of those people watch the NFL and watch it more than they watch college football.
Are we basically, you know, we're talking about this. Is all of this sort of going back to, again, creating another NCAA and undoing the Supreme Court decision from like 1984 with Oklahoma? Like we want to have one media deal so everybody's not fighting over each other. If ESPN's going to own everything.
But they do it much smarter than that. Remember the one media deal back in the day was, we're going to control access because we don't want if we put everybody on TV all the time, then we can't sell any tickets.
Yeah.
And there would be weeks when, like, you know, Penn State would play Ohio State. I'm making this up because Penn State wasn't in the Big Ten yet.
Yeah.
And like it wouldn't be on TV, but Appalachian State Wofford would. Like that's not what you want ultimately. If you want to make the most money on television, is a single seller. But that all the games get sold, but they get parceled out so you can charge a higher price. I mean, there's a reason the NFL doesn't just make more money because more people watch it. It makes a lot more money because they get more per eyeball because mm-hmm. they say NBC, you can have this and Fox, you can have this and CBS, you can have this. Meanwhile, there's in colleges, they're competing for those networks and the networks are competing for what they consider to be the best leagues. And it drives the price down.
I know that I got into writing about college football so that I can talk about the television business. I love this.
You talk about supply and demand.
This is my favorite thing. It's fantastic. The wonder and the pageantry of a board meeting with ESPN. I love it. I've dreamed of one day getting to imagine myself in that board meeting talking about football games as a product and as
inventory.
Inventory for television networks. Fantastic sport. Yeah, we have here. And
well,
yet,
I've always been a proponent. I've always enjoyed college football as sort of the headless chicken going around acting crazy and knocking everything over. That's always been great. But I do think
feature, you know, not a bug again.
Yeah. I mean, the center cannot hold. I think it's all of it. It's starting to spin. You know, the wheels have been wobbly and it's kind of been a great wacky ride, but the wheels may be, you know, the wheels are getting wobblier. At some point they fly off and we're all in the ditch, except mm-hmm. for Greg Sankey and the SEC, who are tootling down in 16 Bentleys down the road.
It just means more, fellas. It just means more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Josh, about a month ago at The Athletic, I believe our intrepid colleague Bill Landis pitched the idea of doing Recruiting Confidential, which was talking to a bunch of high school coaches inside a state line about what recruiting was like in that state. This week, myself and Joe Rexrode wrote about Tennessee Confidential. Josh, you wrote about South Carolina Confidential last month. South Carolina is an interesting spot. We'll talk about Tennessee in a second. What did you take away from your conversations around the state?
My biggest takeaway from my perspective, which is South Carolina beat writer, was that, boy, you either loved or hated Will Muschamp as the South Carolina head coach. There were some high school coaches in this state who he really clicked with because Will would just honestly be delighted to call you up and talk about ball for 30 minutes. I mean, he would talk, he was just as interested in talking about what your guys ran Friday night and why it didn't work because of X, Y, and Z, or did work because of X, Y, and Z, as he was would be breaking down NFL film. And that clicked with a bunch of people. Some people it just flat didn't click with. He came across as aloof, as didn't give a crap, as a guy who was trying to recruit at an Alabama level at not Alabama and look down his nose at little old South Carolina coaches. And so when you're in the state the size of South Carolina, you can't alienate 50% of the people. You can't survive that way. You got to get them all on board. And South Carolina was unable to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Under his previous regime.
Yeah. Andy, we've done so many of these, a bunch of different states. As you've been able to read some of these, and first of all, if you guys have not read them on our site at The Athletic, you should
do
that.
Spectacular.
There we have Tennessee. We just ran Georgia. We've had Arizona, Florida, Texas, Michigan, California, Pennsylvania, Ohio, South Carolina. Alaska's coming, I promise you guys. We'll get there. We'll get there. Alaska will be right after Idaho, and we will have some really great insight.
Coach
there.
A works in Barrow. Oh, wait, no, that gives it away who it is.
Yeah. So, Andy, as you've looked at this series from a whole, from an SEC perspective, anything jump out to you?
Yeah, there's a lot of high school coaches who get pretty upset when they don't have anybody that the coaches want.
Yeah, and that tension is always interesting.
Like you could sense that part of it. Because I felt like reading all of these in the different states, it felt like the coaches who felt like they had players those coaches were going after seemed like the coaches, seemed to get a lot of attention from the coaches. And then the other ones, for the most part, didn't. Now, I will say the best recruiters are the coaches that seem to call everybody. Mm-hmm. And maintain a relationship with everybody because they know just in case there might be a guy next year
or somebody might transfer.
Exactly. Well, and that's the other thing. You got to keep these schools that are not superpower high schools. You got to keep tabs on them because that's where the players who often are good at superpower high schools are freshmen and sophomores. So you can get in on them early. So you got to know those guys.
And let's not shed a tear. I certainly never will for these coaches and with the salaries that they make right now. But think about that for a minute. I'm thinking about it on a South Carolina scale in a state this size. Think about it in Texas. Think about it in California.
It's ridiculous how many people you have talked to.
You have to stay in touch with all of these guys, the sort of discipline and whatever mental fortitude it takes on a Tuesday when, you know, you'd rather be doing whatever else to say, no, I've got to call Joe Bob Cooter at South, Podunk High.
Joe Bob Cooter, is Jim Bob Cooter's brother?
distant cousin.
Yeah, distant cousins from South down Carolina. In the bayou, yeah.
And I got to talk, and he's going to keep me on the phone for 30 minutes, but I have to do that because in 6 years, he might have a guard I need.
There are so many aspects of being a college football coach that sound like my personal nightmare that I really can't imagine like doing a lot of this, but I think that.
Now that one we can identify with those reporters because you know, you have those people you deal with who give you information and like once every 2 years, they tell you something useful. Mm-hmm. But you got to pick up when they call.
Yeah.
And you got to have that conversation.
Yeah.
If I'm a college coach, could I hire somebody? I mean, you have all these support staff. Could I hire somebody who could imitate my voice well enough that's all his job is?
Matt Stinchcomb does Mac Brown. He does Spurrier. He does Kirby. He does Muschamp.
So you hire this guy. And you give him a list and say, all your job is to stay in touch with these 50 high schools and BS these guys and make them believe they're talking to me. And then when they do have a player,
incredible idea. You need to sell this to college coaches.
I really do. I wish if I could do voices, I'd start sending out
a Josh Kendall soundboard and just call everyone.
I'd start sending out resumes right now.
I think so. The one thing that I take away from these big picture that's really interesting to me is the high school coach's perspective is really, really interesting because they see it every year. They see, I don't want to say who these coaches really are. That's sort of like more sinister than I mean, but they get a good feel for who these coaches are over time. But the one thing that I think is interesting is the coaches aren't the people making the decisions and their opinions matter, but they're not the end all be all. And that part of it is really interesting to me because you want to have coaches on your side that can help you. But you don't close with the high school coach. You don't win recruiting battles with the high school coach. And it was interesting to me, coaches that, you know, like Jeremy Pruitt, for instance, on our Tennessee Confidential, he was a really good recruiter. I mean, granted, he seemed to have some recruiting PEDs, I suppose, as many do. but the coaches were a little rankled at some of them. They felt like he, you know, didn't really want to get to know them personally. He was just like, well, who do you got? What's this guy? And kind of did look down on Tennessee a little bit. I mean, they were not very impressed with the last in-state class of Tennessee.
Here's one thing. And I mean, look, high school coaches should understand this. Not all football coaches are nice. Like,
wait, really?
They don't all have the personality where they can sit there and BS with you for 30 minutes. They just don't. Very true.
Yeah. The Steve Spurrier stories in my story were my favorite part, but anyway.
Oh yeah. I mean, that he's a prime example. He's interested, but that he's not a small talker.
Yeah.
Urb Meyer's not a small talker.
Mm-hmm.
Ellis Johnson, who is one of the great college assistants in SEC history and a really underrated
The best recruiter of the state of South Carolina in the history of the world, probably.
Mm-hmm. One of the best recruiters I've known. One of the things he said to me that struck a chord, not for this story, but just we're on recruiting. He said, you have to identify the decision maker early on in the process. And for Jadeveon Clowney, who Ellis got out of Rock Hill, it was his granddad. And if you can, the guys who can really recruit can cut. And sometimes it is the high school coach. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's a 7-on-7 guy. Sometimes it's mama. Sometimes it's his cousin who played at wherever. You got to identify that person early and you got to get them.
It's 100% true. I remember having that conversation with Wes McGriff, who's at Florida now, but he's been at a bunch of different schools, and he had note cards and he had it written down, like who the I think he called him their champion, but basically who the decision maker is, and this is who you're going to stay on, this is who you're going to call. And I remember talking to Charlie Strong about this when he was at Texas, because in the Mac Brown era at Texas, you could still kind of go through the high school coach. But once Charlie got there, by that time, you're talking about 2014, it was just like anywhere else. You had to find their trainer. You had to find, maybe it was a 7-on-7 coach. Maybe it was somebody else in the community, or a mom, or a different relative. But you had to figure that out. And that, I think, changed the dynamics in Texas quite a bit. Jimbo Fisher came in immediately, just recruited like he had at Florida State, because at Florida State, you had to recruit Florida, which is the wild, you know, one of the wilder places to recruit in America. So I think that helped Jimbo when he got there, because other people who'd worked the state were looking at it like the old rules applied. And Jimbo's like, I'm just going to go find their trainer, find whoever it is, and
yeah,
we'll figure it out.
Andy, I did. I should ask you this. I'm not a recruit, Nick, but I am around recruiting. I was talking to somebody about the Florida transfer rules. Is it true you can just transfer whatever you want, whenever you want in Florida at high school?
It's true everywhere, isn't it?
It's yeah. not. It's yeah. a, no.
Unofficially,
I mean, it's not true. In a lot
unofficially,
of
yeah. It's now. It's true in the athletic, the FHSAA. You can mm-hmm. do that. Like, if I wanted to send my kid to a high school he's not zoned for, I'd have to get him into a magnet program. But the thing is, like, if the foot that they wanted him to play football, they'd get him in the magnet program
yeah.
so
yeah.
that he could play football.
Okay. Well, I think the one thing that I thought was really interesting, just in general, and coaches didn't really bring this up, which kind of surprised me. But when I talked to players and when I would do stories on recruits, a lot of them appreciated Jeremy Pruitt's honesty. In, I care about you. I am going to advocate for you, but also let's be real about what this is. This is a transactional relationship. I need to use you to win games to keep my job. You need to use me to get to the next level. He would be pretty explicit about that with guys. And with some guys, it's going to resonate. And with some guys, it's going to feel a little cold, I guess. Even if
I was
going
to say, that's
realistic.
Like a colder version of the Saban one. Remember yeah. when the recruit leaked the Saban pitch from a Zoom call earlier this year?
Like, yes, that was really compelling.
Yeah. Like the what you just described is like that if you had no social skills, basically. Because
what are you saying, Andy?
Because what Saban yeah. says is, you can come here or not. We're going to find somebody just as good, but we like you, and we'll give you a chance to compete. And if you work really, really hard, you can be a first rounder like some of these other guys who are here. Mm-hmm. That's all he says. That's his whole pitch.
And some guys like that. And it's going to work for a lot of people. I mean,
I remember talking to Jonathan Allen. He loved that pitch because everybody else was just slobbering all over him. Mm-hmm. And that made him very uncomfortable. And there's a lot of people like that. They don't want to be excessively praised. They just want to hear honesty. And so
he
appreciated that. And that's why he went to Alabama.
Do you think that some of the secret sauce of Alabama is that approach and not having to go through the infamous de-recruitment process when you get on campus? Do you think that how big of a factor do you think that is in Alabama's consistency and excellence?
It's got to help, right?
I think it's a factor. Yeah. But I mean, I think that 98% of the factor is, you know, you just get the biggest studs and they're the easiest guys to coach.
You might have some,
but I think Alabama's become a self-selecting sample. Because there are 5 stars Alabama won't touch.
Very
because
true.
They don't feel like mentally they would fit in with the other guys.
Or there's the fake 5-star, which is very real.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And they seem to be pretty good at sniffing those out.
Well, if you're Alabama, you've created a monster where everybody comes to you, like the SEC. You know, Texas and Oklahoma
that's a good
come
point.
To you. If you're Alabama, the 5-stars come to you.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see. That's one thing that we didn't really talk about with the sort of SEC factor of, you know, when the transfer portal came and everybody likes the idea of immediate eligibility, but the G5 coaches are, I don't know the right word. I think they are understanding, but a little bit scared and a little bit frustrated that, hey, this guy might blow up at our school for 2 years and then go somewhere else. And I wonder with the transfer portal with immediate eligibility, will we see an influx of guys that have success at, you know, NC State or Oregon State and say
Coastal Carolina? which has a great quarterback right now in Grayson McCall, who I'm shocked is still there.
I'm curious how often we'll see that. If this breakoff comes and the SEC becomes truly on another level of college football, how frequent that will be. I have to assume it would be a lot.
But well, I think G5 is going to be a farm team level for the SEC and the Big Ten and those schools.
You almost shrink the pool of teams who could realistically poach from G5 too, because, you know, 6 months ago, could Baylor have gone and poached a G5 guy? And now you go to that same G5 guy and they say, you know, frankly, coach, you're G5 now too. Why would I make that move? I mean, when you
I didn't think about it that way, but you're right. If you're at UCF, and I saw the artist rendering of what they're building, and you're a football player and you're floating in that lazy river, and somebody from the lower end of the Pac-12 calls you, you're like,
right.
You're looking around, you're like, nah, I'm good.
I think that transfer portal too.
You're G5 now too, buddy. Welcome to the club.
I think the transfer portal was one of the things that the coaches in Tennessee brought up. I think we had multiple coaches bring this up in that, you know, part of this might just be this year with COVID and we'll see. But with coaches, you know, when 130 different coaches are saving five spots for the transfer portal, those are five scholarships that aren't going to high school kids. And that adds up. That's what? 650
That increases the pool for you as the G5 coach, as the FCS coach. You're going to be able to find more talented players. Now, they're going to get taken from you in a year or two. But just understand. But here's the other thing. And this is, if you're a smart G5 coach or a smart FCS coach, you're looking at it this way. If everybody keeps stealing your players, somebody's about to steal you too.
That's a good point. But I think they were the high school coaches were complaining that it's harder for kids to get scholarships, and that was an interesting side effect of the transfer.
That's just the math of this year, though. That's
part of it. That's part of it, and it'll be interesting to see if they expand the scholarship limit, which I think may be happening very very soon. But
they're going to expand the 25. They're not going to expand the 85. But the thing is,
no, the 25 will change
once this blanket eligibility waiver thing runs its course through the next 4 years. The math will go back to what it was. Mm-hmm. The same number of scholarships will be available. So it just, the question is who's going to get them and where do you go first?
Well, it seems like coaches want to go to the transfer portal first, but we'll see. We'll see. Guys, it's been a good episode. I've enjoyed chatting. We've had a lot to talk about. We'll see if we get an Empire Strikes Back chapter of the next As College Football Turns. We'll be here to talk about it. Every Monday, Football and Grits, myself, Andy Staples, Josh Kendall, thank you for joining us, for gracing us with your presence and giving us some insight into your time with Greg Sankey. Any parting words for us?
Just always happy to be here anytime.
Well, thank you guys for listening again. Subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of those things, and you can get it delivered directly to your device. Thank you for listening. This has been Football and Grits. On the Andy Staples and Friends feed, for Andy Staples, we are his friends. We'll see you guys again next week.